Progressive Rugby League.
Hey, Jono Duncan. Today we're talking to someone who has just participated in their first election. If only I'd known earlier, I could have shared my experience from my first and still to date only election campaign. It's the mid-90s, I'm in the 6th grade, gunning for the position of male sports captain. The favourite for the post is Paulie March, not his real name. Smart, funny, tall, all that. Publicly, I'm not the slightest bit interested. Sports captain? Lame, whatever. Privately though, I can feel the sash fluttering across my breast. I can smell the envy of my schoolmates, particularly the delightful Paul March. So I get to subtly campaigning. What do you reckon, boys? Bring a bit of fun back to sports captain? I feel a groundswell grow around me as we reach election day. People are talking Jono Duncan. Privately, I'm bursting with excitement. The public Jono, though, is keeping things at wouldn't-it-be-a-laugh levels. Mr. Bramson, not his real name, counts the votes at his desk. His eyebrows rise. Good sign. Soon it's time to read the results. In third place, not his real voice, with 5 votes, Marco. Smattering of applause. In second place, with 6 votes, Jono. Well done, Jono. It was my first realization that hearts literally do actually break. I was shattered. My cool facade wavered, tears welled. Paulie March had won in a landslide. As time has passed, like most, I've been wary of politicians, but one thing I've always appreciated since that foray into electioneering is that it takes some guts to put yourself out there and stand up in front of your community. I didn't and don't have those guts. My guest, on the other hand, absolutely does. Ross Peltier is used to tough and willing environments. After all, he's a front row forward who has plied his trade admirably over the years for the Keighley Cougars, Bradford Bulls, and the Jamaican national team, helping the Reggae Warriors qualify for a maiden World Cup berth later this year. But just last week, Ross completed another battle, this time in the Kirklees Council ward of Birstall and Berkenshaw. He was the Green Party candidate. So what drove a hulking prop to have a dip at local politics? What has the reaction been like from the rugby league community? And how can I appropriately segue the interview later on to talk about the Rugby League World Cup? These are questions, and to do the answering, Ross Peltier, prop forward now with Doncaster RLFC and local council candidate for the Green Party, has kindly agreed to help us out. Ross, thanks for your time and welcome to the Progressive Rugby League podcast.
Oh, no, mate, it's a pleasure to be on, really. It's a great intro, really. So, yeah.
Good stuff. Thanks for coming on the show, Ross. Now, you've had a busy week, an election last Thursday, 6th of May, and then Sunday, today, when we're recording, your first game of the season with Doncaster. I think you're probably the only player who will contest an election and play in a Rugby League World Cup in the space of 6 months. First things first, though, how did the election go last week?
Yeah, it was good. It was a great experience. I think I come away with 419 votes. You know, the winner got 2,000. It was the first, like, dive into the political world. No, it was good. I didn't campaign. I didn't get out there, canvas or anything like that, really, because it was kind of a last-minute thing. And, you know, I live within and around that area, so you just put my name in the hat and thought I'd see how it'd go, really. And, yeah, I'm proud of getting 419 votes, really. But I think the party itself, and you know, me and talking to other people who were candidates and who've been elected, you know, I think, you know, I could have a future with the party, and you know, I never know, maybe get a contested seat next time and it makes something happen. So yeah, it's a great experience, really, and yeah, something I'm going to keep doing, really.
Yeah, great, I saw the results, and you, besides the two main parties, Labour and Conservatives, you were next cab off the rank, so that's a really great result.
Now
Ross, tell us about your local area. Birstall and Berkenshaw is the ward that you stood for in the Kirklees Council election. For those of us on the other side of the world, can you please paint us a picture of that area that you wanted to represent?
It's a small area between Leeds and Bradford, really. It's pretty much a border, but then it's a Kirklees area which falls under like Huddersfield and stuff. So it's like right in between the three cities of Leeds, Huddersfield and Bradford. Mm-hmm. You know, I currently live just outside of the ward, but my brother and everything lives in the ward, and Bradford Bulls, we used to train up at a school in that area and stuff, so I know the area well. Yeah, it's just a small area. It's two small towns. First, still probably the bigger of the two towns. Rugby league wise, it's like neighbouring Batley Bulldogs, Shrewsbury Rams and stuff like that, and Yeah, I spent a lot of time in the area when I first left school in my apprenticeship, building social housing there. Mm-hmm. And then that's progressed and, you know, I've become more into sustainable housing methods and stuff. And I think that's what's helped me on my journey to Green Party. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so the experience of running in the local election, you mentioned that there wasn't that much involved this time around. Was that COVID related or just a time thing? What was involved? Were you handing out pamphlets at the station? Could you rub shoulders with the community or was that not possible this time around?
No, just for this one, I know a friend of mine, he's been a Green Party candidate in that area, you know, for a while, and I think it's in that area, I think it's not really been a contested seat, really. I think it's been a Conservative stronghold for a long time, and, you know, I think they just wanted someone else to run as well, and he knew I'd be interested, so, you know, they pitched the idea to me, and I was like, yeah, go on, then I'll do it, I might as well go for it.
Yeah.
And then I think just after that, local media and the Green Party himself realised, oh, actually, it's not just a random person who lives there, like I play rugby league, I play for Jamaica and stuff like that, so, you know, I got media traction and stuff like that, and people started picking it up and actually listening. By the time I decided to run and, you know, I had my name down, it was pretty last minute, so the party himself didn't really have any materials for me to handing out, and especially with COVID and stuff, I didn't really have any posters or handing out or stuff like that. But Andrew Cooper, who's running for West Yorkshire Mayor, and other people in the party, I got to meet them and network, and really just announced I'm in the party and I'm going for it. And, you know, whereas I didn't really have a campaign this time, it was just word of mouth and me putting the word out on social media. You know, I think he's welcomed me into the party. You know, I've had outreach from all kind of people across the board, from the deputy of the Green Party and all the way right through. And, yeah, and I've just been welcomed with open arms, really. And, yeah, it wasn't so much as expecting to win, but, you know, having a candidate in the area and then, you know, having a candidate like myself, we ended up getting some votes, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess it's step by step, isn't it? Now, just for context for people in Australia and elsewhere, from my understanding, the Kirklees Council area, it's a broad area, is more a Labour stronghold, but your particular ward is more a Conservative stronghold. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is, really. And I think it's more the Berkshire side of it. Berkshire is more of a middle-class area. It's not really a working-class area. Mm-hmm. So that's like the Conservative side. But then Birstall as well. Birstall is a very working-class area. You know, it's got Labour strongholds and stuff. You know, the MP for the local area, who tragically were murdered a few years ago, Joe Cox, he was a big presence within this area. And Labour really had a stronghold on more of the Birstall, Batley side of it.
Okay.
But, you know, when it comes to a Berkshire thing, it's more of a Conservative area.
We'll talk more about the political stuff shortly, but what about your first game of the season for Doncaster? You've basically just arrived home. You're up against a pretty big club, one of your former clubs, the Keighley Cougars. How'd you guys go and how did you pull up?
Yeah, it was a good game, really. Good to just get the boots back on. Mm. You know, Keith, they've had a few, about four pre-season games or games before, whereas we're straight into it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After when COVID laid everything off last March, we haven't played a game since.
Wow.
You know, with numbers and stuff, we haven't been able to even have 30 inside, just been doing lefty rights and stuff like that. So, you know, it was an experience for us, and we was well within the game, first half, you know, second half, I think. Keithley got into his heads in their game plan, worked really just high completions in the rain, and we just coughed up too much ball and too much penalty. You know, we had two in bin, stuff like that. As half-back, Watson Balls from PNG had to come off with a head injury in the second half, and we just lost his way. But, you know, it was rusty, but there's plenty of positives to work on, really. It was just good to be back playing, man.
Yeah. And so I think you guys lost in the end 44-18. So what was it like getting back in the swing into the grind of a rugby league match after being away from competition so long?
Yeah, it was weird for me. I've been playing at professional level rugby league now since I was at 10 years, going in my 11th year. So, you know, you're kind of familiar, but you could tell it's been a long time off and you get caught in that tumble dryer, and especially in the middle for myself, getting spotted up. Everyone's calling your name and trying to get you, and, you know, three, four tackles on bounce, and you get, it's like, wow, this is what it's all about. You know, so it was just a good welcome back to it. And yeah, so we've got a lot to build on, man. But yeah, it was just, your body was like, oh, really? This is what we're back at. It. So yeah.
You'll feel it tomorrow and the next day, hey?
Yeah, definitely, man.
And how do you see the chances for the Dons in 2021? Is promotion a realistic goal?
Yeah, definitely a realistic goal. You know, with the squad we've got, the players we've got, you know, we're definitely a top three, top four club, you know, and playoffs is the aim. Anything short of playoffs, you know, we've failed, really.
Yeah.
And when you're playoffs, anything can happen. And I think with what we've shown today is the first year out against, you know, probably one of the best teams in our comp. You know, for much of the game we were in it, it was just a lot of sloppy tries, really scrappy tries from our end. And it's to be expected, even first time playing in over a year, especially as a new group of players. You know, we had about four or five on debut, mm-hmm. you know, and starting 13. So, yeah, it's one of them. But, yeah, we build on it from this week. And yeah, that's the aim, playoffs, definitely.
Because that was your first game for the Dons as well, right? You used to play for Bradford and Keighley before that.
No, I actually got a free in last season before the pandemic.
Of course.
I signed last year. Yeah, we got three games in before everything ended. So, yeah, it wasn't my debut, but yeah. It felt like it's been that long, really.
yeah, fair enough. Now, Ross, you're a rugby league front row forward, so you're obviously used to getting down and dirty in the literal sense. What drove you to want to experience this in the most vivid metaphorical sense in the arena of politics? So why did you stand in the local elections last week?
Especially in Bradford, you know, my family have been very community-oriented and very community-involved with various local groups, community groups and stuff. And my mum is a person who volunteers and gives a lot of her time, you know, to all sorts of groups, you know, to help better people on the health side of things. You know, she's a chair of, like, the Black Health Forum and stuff, you know, encouraging health services and stuff in the West Indian African communities and things like that. And, you know, just from being around that, and she also helped run a local care home and stuff within the city, community-run care home. And I've always been around there, and she does, like, cafes once a month for elderly people and network and get around each other and stuff. All kind of stuff like that. And I've just grown up around that and really been socially involved and, you know, conscious. And I love the city, and I love everything about Bradford, really, and the surrounding areas. And yeah, it's a natural progression for me, I think. I've always been getting encouraged, you know, to go and try to be a councillor and stuff like that. And, you know, there were talks before the pandemic and stuff with a few Labour councillors mentoring me and stuff like that. And they never came about, but, you know, when this opportunity for a green pack came about, I jumped here, you know. And I think when I'm at Bradford especially, a lot of lads joked and said, you know, one day I'll be Lord Mayor of Bradford and things like that, because, you know, any promo or anything in the city or anything around any group, you know, I'm always there and I'm willing to help, really. And I think it would just, yeah, it's something I've always been interested in. And, you know, I've seen things happen in my city, and I've seen how things are running, how things go in the city, and where funds go to, and you question it at times, and you think, you know, we need better. And I've just thought, instead of, you know, thinking it's time, you know, can try to put some action in and really try to get involved and make some changes. And like, through me doing this, I've had other people say, oh, it's giving them a courage to look into it, or give them a courage to become more politically active and try help in the city. And yeah, it's just been a natural progression for me, really.
Yeah, well, it definitely does take courage. Now, Ross, rugby league in both the UK and Australia has traditionally been the domain of the Labour Party. I guess rugby league essentially started as a workers' rights issue. More recently, rugby league, the working class community, has become a bit of a battleground. Once again, in both countries, in Australia, both leaders know the importance of the rugby league vote, while in the UK, the rugby league vote was explicitly chased by the Tories through the whole Workington Man thing. But certainly in Australia, and I presume in the UK, rugby league has rarely, if ever, been associated with the Green Party. So why the Greens, Ross?
You know, I think, I don't know if you're aware, you know, the current political landscape in Britain, you know, I've always been a Labour voter. Well, my family have been Labour voters. Me, when I was of the age of voting, I've always been a Labour voter, and that's just been how it is. And, you know, working class people, that's always been how it is. But I think if you see how the Labour Party's gone of recent times, and with the new leadership and things like that, I think a lot of minority communities have felt let down by the new Labour leadership and the way they're trying to go. You know, and I think a lot of when they talk about working class in Britain and working class communities, they fail to acknowledge that ethnic minority communities are actually working class. Mm-hmm. Like, it's always aimed at the white working class, but, you know, in West Yorkshire we have a lot of areas that are, you know, working class black areas, but it seems like we're not the voters that anyone's trying to get, you know. And a lot of people feel disenfranchised, and it's been the same for me. And I felt myself, you know, looking around at the political landscape, and, you know, I looked at what the Greens stand for and a lot of their policies, and, you know, I feel like that's why I aligned with, you know. And especially with, you know, sustainability issues, that's something that I feel deeply about. And yeah, it's just what aligned with me, and I kind of fell into it. I knew someone took me in and said, listen, why don't you try and run for the Greens, you know, be happy to have it. And then there's a link down as well, Andrew Cooper, running for West Yorkshire Vales, McCarran Stuff and Greens. Knows my dad from years ago. My dad helped him set up a renewable energy business and stuff like that. So, yeah. It just all fell into place, and I felt like for me right now, that's probably the best part that I'd want to join.
Yeah, and so Keir Starmer, the Labour leader in the UK, he noted after a poor showing from his party in the local elections that Labour had lost the trust of working people, and those votes seem to mostly have gone to the Conservatives, but it seems like you think the Greens can be an alternative for working people, including that what I'm clumsily calling the rugby league vote. Is that accurate? Or you mentioned there the distinction between white working class and other working class people of colour.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I feel from working class areas, you know, especially with the sport of rugby league, we've all been one, you know. The rugby league is the richest Britain of black players playing from days when Union and Wales and stuff would have let them play. You know, so we have that rich history there. And I think as well for a lot of working class people, when they think of, like, Greens or progressiveness or leftness, you know, I feel the media is very toxic in Britain and it's given a bad reputation to it. Like, working-class people think, oh, Greens are just hippies, or just this, or they want to take his cars off, or they want to do this, or they want to do that. And I think it's a very Tory-dominated media landscape in Britain, and especially working-class people, you know. I know people don't like to stigmatise and things like that, but a lot of the tabloids and things are eaten up by a lot of working class people. And I think, you know, me doing this has helped dispel some of the myths, and, you know, some of the lads at rugby have spoke to me and have been interested about the Greens and stuff like that, and realise that it's not just, you know, hippies and people hugging trees and this and that. It's about actual change, and a big thing, especially Andrew Cooper's running for mayor, you know, it's about, you know, renewable, affordable social housing, because there's a major social housing issue up here. You know, I work in social housing. I'm an asbestos surveyor, and our main contracts are within, like, social housing. And you can see how there's so much need for it, and so much need for quality, sustainable housing. And I think the Greens, they have answers to all that. And I think what's happened in these results, there's been a huge surge for the Green Party. There's been a massive Green surge. And more people have actually, when they've looked into it and they've seen, they feel that, you know, Conservatives could never vote for them for certain things, or they feel like Labour don't represent them. I think Greens have really just sweeped in and took them voters, really. And I think that's happening across a lot of working class towns, really. I think you see towns like Stockport and stuff, Greens have won in Sheffield, safe seats that have been Labour safe seats for years, you know, Greens have won. So, yeah, I think the tides are changing, really, and working class people are realising they do have an alternative to then this two-party system that's been, you know, on the cards for so many years.
Yeah. Now, I read a really good article on you by the journalist John Davidson, where you mentioned that the politics of rugby league has changed over recent times in your experience. You said it's gone from something of a left-leaning sport to a bit of a right-leaning one. Can you flesh that out a bit and explain how that manifests in the real world of a rugby league player like yourself? Or what are some tangible examples where you've seen that change?
I think for myself, where I live and things like that, you know, I'm passionate on this. We've seen 11 years of a Tory rule, and I've seen the towns and cities and places where I'm from and where I live get progressively worse and worse and less investment. And I just feel with the media and especially with the Tory Party right now, it's a lot of culture wars. They're telling you they're going to protect you from faceless enemies who, they tell you, oh, these people want to rip down statues, or they want to do this, or they want to do that. And it's, in fact, you'll never find men, more than a handful of people who'll ever say that, but you know, it's creating these giant ghosts and creating this fear within people. I think Brexit played a big part as well. You know, there's a lot of people in towns who kind of shot himself in the foot with wanting to be out of Europe and not realising, like, the ramifications of it. And I think it's all about optics of things, really. You, when working class people who are in a terrible situation feel that socialism is worse for them than, you know, this ultra-capitalism, then that's where we have a massive problem for me. You know, I think in Britain, especially with the COVID contracts, I don't know how much you know about that, you know, but Tory donors getting hundreds of millions and billions of contracts and providing inadequate equipment and things like that. That is literally just socialism, but for rich people. But, you know, when I'm out in the street or I talk to people, they feel that, oh, socialism, you know, I'm on £9 an hour, this and that. They want to take all my money and give it to some immigrants or give it to some homeless people, but it's not that, you know what I mean? And I feel I think there's been a massive shift on people thinking, you know, wanting better for everybody else is going to take away from them and make what they have worse, when it's not the case at all. You know, I just think it's a massive, well, it's well orchestrated campaign, really, for the media, of like trying to shift the narrative and make you feel the people who actually have your best interests at heart actually don't.
Yeah.
And that we're in this situation, and oh, that's just how it is. We're doing our best. Nothing can change, when in reality, we can change a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's similar in the UK, but it seems the term something like woke is weaponized, and you end up not even debating the actual issues. You just sort of like get labeled with the term like woke, and then all of a sudden people dismiss things, so you don't even actually get to talk about the issues.
Yeah, when people ever bring that word up, I say, well, what is the opposite to being woke? It's been asleep. Like, how has the insult been awake? Like, you're woke, you're aware of these things, you're questioning things. How is that ever a bad thing? I'll never understand. It's just, I feel it's just been a real good changing the narrative and misguiding people, really. And that's the thing, you know. And a lot of times when you get into facts about things with people, you know, they realise that they don't really have answers for it, but they just believe what they've heard. Do you know what I mean? You can go on for hours and you can debate and you can argue for hours, but people don't want to debate or they don't want to argue, really. But yeah, it's all about having open and honest conversations, really.
Yeah.
I feel me doing this, as I had that, I've had some good chats with some of the lads, you know, from Castleford and Featherston and areas like that. And they've opened up their ears and they've seen, actually, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I was going to ask you what the reaction has been from your mates in rugby league. Were they surprised that not only you were standing, but who you were standing for?
Yeah, it was a surprise, you know, really. I think some would know them better. They wouldn't have been surprised by it. But yeah, the party itself, they were surprised. And, you know, I got a few shouts from opposition today about Green Party and all sorts of things. So, you know, I reckon I'm going to get some shouts and stick. But yeah, no, it all comes with the territory, really.
Yeah. So there is a bit of chat in the field and a bit of sledging that sometimes happens. So what are people sort of, I don't know, criticising your recycled water policy or something in between plays or something?
It's just like, fucking, I don't even know, like, fucking, like, there'd be a knock on the field and someone like, yeah, it's for Green Party, this and that. And I'm thinking, oh, it's one of them, but yeah. Oh, you know, people refer to me as Green Party now, so yeah, it's one of them things, but it's all good.
Oh, there you go. So there are worse things. Now, Ross, British Rugby League, as you mentioned, has a wonderful, rich history of black players, including players of Jamaican descent. I understand the great Ellery Hanley and Clive Sullivan were both of Jamaican descent. But from what I read and what I can tell, it doesn't necessarily translate to support from those communities on the terraces. Why do you think that is?
I feel one of the main things, you know, for me, I grew up in a great era of players. You had your Leon Price of the world, you know, you had your Richie Barnett, you had a lot of Super League players playing Super League that time who were from Bradford, who I could relate to. I mean, then you got the era before that, a family friend of mine who recently tried to pass away last year, Jeff Price, who played for York for a number of years, you know, his brother who played for Hunslet, you know, like you say, we had Ellery Hanley, Des Drummond, you know, Henderson Kill, all these kind of people, and they really inspired a generation. And for me, being from Bradford, having so many great black players from the Jamaican community playing rugby league, you know, it kind of inspired me. But I think it's always been that. I don't think participation numbers in going to watch sport from the communities has been that great anywhere in any sport. But what I've really seen is participation numbers, you know, decrease on an amateur and junior level, really, which is a sad thing. But, you know, when we played Jamaica, we played Wales a few years ago, Wakefield, and we managed to get like 6,000 fans, you know, people bringing the kids, and the kids wanted to play rugby and they've been inspired. And then we played England Knights back in the 2019, and we've got a great turnout there, and we really engage with a lot of the local community in Leeds. And, you know, it's about cities like Bradford, Huddersfield especially. You know, you had you know, Joe Farrell plays for Jamaica, his dad, Anthony Farrell, you know, Darren Flair, you know, the St. Helairs, all that. You had a lot of players, you know, in the 90s, 2000s who came through and played rugby league, and participation numbers were high for, you know, black kids and black people in that city. But, you know, I think without how the sports kind of declined and football's, you know, had the rise, I think more kids have turned to football and seen football as a sport they want to do, really. We've really lost out there, really. Massively.
And do you think maybe the presence of the Jamaican national team in that part of Yorkshire, the UK, can play a role in bringing the community back to the game, not only in terms of participation, but on the terraces as well?
Yeah, massively. You know, I think London Broncos have helped bring through another wave of young black players. But yeah, especially us being based in Yorkshire a lot and playing our games in Yorkshire a lot, you know, we can get into the communities, and most of the lads are from them communities and from Yorkshire, really. We can engage, and we've already seen young people from days when we've played in Grenades and stuff come watch us train and really inspire and stuff. And that's what it's there to do, you know, build a legacy and create a legacy. And yeah, and as well as the political stuff, that's what I want to do, is help boost participation numbers just among young people across the board within the city of Bradford, because that's took a massive decline. Because I remember when I come through playing amateur, you know, we had a whole league of just teams from based in Bradford, and now we're down to like two within the youth leagues, you know. So as much as it's been a decline in black players, there's been a decline in all players as well, really. And I think, yeah, we've seen it in through the gates and through participation numbers. It's struggling, and I think rugby league's really trying to find its footing and trying to find its the way it evolves, really, in the landscape over here.
Yeah, and International Rugby League could be a path there. Now, Ross, speaking of, you're, of course, a Jamaican Rugby League representative, as we touched on. You helped the Reggae Warriors qualify for the Rugby League World Cup 2021 with a win over the USA in Florida a couple of years back now. Before I get to that day, I want to ask you about that day, but before I get to that day, what are your recollections of your Jamaican debut? Because you guys have come a long way in a short period of time, so I'm curious to know how that experience started for you.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, you know. Well, I've second most caps for Jamaica now, you know, behind Joe Brown, who had one more than me. But I remember my debut, it was in a peeing down rain, proper torrential rain, in a baseball stadium in Philadelphia against South Africa.
Wow.
Yeah, and over the gravel bits, you know, the turf was all patched up, so the pitch won the smartest. And, you know, we played against South Africa, and we won convincingly, you know, in torrential rain. But yeah, that was a great memory. That was the first World Cup qualifiers, I think, 2011. Yeah, right. 10 years ago now. Yeah.
So there you go. So you're going from a gravel-laden pitch in Philadelphia to the Rugby League World Cup in 2021. So a pretty good journey for the Jamaican team. Now, let's fast forward to that World Cup qualification. So what are your recollections for qualifying for the World Cup? I interviewed Romeo Monteith last year, manager and all-round stalwart, and he said the second half, as the United States were breathing down your necks, was like a 40-minute heart attack for him. What was it like as a player?
Yeah, for me, I think my third World Cup qualifiers, and I've been there before. The year before, we felt we had a good chance of qualifying, and we threw it away. But this time, we beat Canada convincingly, like very convincingly. And, you know, confidence were high and confidence were buzzing. And then we went to first half against America, and we were leading, I think it was like 10-0 at half time, 10-6 or something at half time. And I just remember the boys saying, you know, massive 40 minutes, all we have to do is not let them score. If they don't score, we go to World Cup.
Yeah.
That was the talk. That was like the talk. We just said, as long as they do not score, we go to World Cup, you know. And Ashton Golden, you know, for the Giants now, he was massive. And I think just the togetherness, every time we play, it's crazy, like the togetherness and the willingness to work for each other, and the camaraderie and team spirit we have is unreal. And, you know, throughout, I know Romy said we were a heart attack, but for the boys on the field, I think we just felt that they won't break us. They won't break us down. And that just ran through the whole team. And I think everybody felt just comfortable. We knew they wouldn't break us down. And yeah, it was so much special, like just counting down in minutes. And yeah, Ashton definitely pulled us out of a lot of holes when the middles were sucking it in and we were struggling, and even nine were just going, and then Benjo Bishop were coming in after and scooting us. And I think them two's Super League experience really helped us. You know, they took us to a next level. And yeah, it was just the spirit, and you know, to see so many grown men crying, you know, especially for myself and Romeo. It's been a long journey, you know, players like Omari Caro and Joe Brown. It's been a long journey for us. We've had to deal with a lot of ridicule and people thinking it was a novelty and things like that over the time. And I think all the emotion came out, and it was just amazing that, you know, we got to a World Cup with a team with a lot of English-based, you know, heritage players. You know, World Cup in England, it was a massive thing, really. And yeah, it was just a special moment, really. Probably the most special moment in my career I've experienced, really. It was just amazing, yeah.
Yeah, amazing what belief can do for a group of people. And and it's you mentioned Romeo Monteith and a few of the players that have been involved, but also I guess it must be heartening to have someone like Jason Robinson, dual international, one of the very best of his generation, on your side too. What's his role been and what effect has he had so far?
Yeah, him and Alex Simmons, they came on board when we qualified, just before we played England Nines and stuff like that. And I think, you know, their commercial contacts, networking, the way they market, most has been second to none. You know, that trip when we qualified, a lot of players funded it themselves. I had a sponsor who helped me fund it. So we paid his own way there and everything. And then, you know, to see when Jason come on board and Alex come on board and sponsors get involved and, you know, get a player Headingley and things like that, get a game against England Knights, it's been massive, really. And then it's just not even a marking thing to have someone like Jason be involved and be there and come on camp and talk to you. You know, he's crazy. Like, he's one of my idols. I didn't play rugby league till I was, you know, older, till I was like 11. I always remember the World Cup final when England won the World Cup. Mm. You know, I remember watching that before I went to my first ever rugby league session. That was inspiring to me. And then to think, you know, years down the line, I'm starting just having a conversation with Jason. It's crazy to me, yeah. So, he's just an inspiration. And they're bringing sponsors in and, you know, they're just making the scope on the game even bigger.
Yeah. Well, I think you're talking about the 2003 Rugby World Cup there where England beat Australia. Yep. Remember that very well. And your thoughts ahead of the upcoming World Cup, how much has COVID affected Jamaica's preparations and how are you going to make up for that and ready yourselves for really the biggest challenge of your lives?
Yeah, it's hindered us, especially for a lot of us part-time players. You know, we've got a lot of part-time lads in there, you know, whose seasons were cancelled and fully called off, you know, so preparations for us fully came to a halt and fully stopped, like, especially for myself, I say that I played for so long. So, you know, it's just been a struggle for us, keeping in shape and just ready, game ready. Like today, it was just a eye-opener playing again, you know, but the Super League boys we've got great staff who've been checking up on us and just touching base, really. And, you know, we've got the framework set out. We've got a week in June where all clubs have given us leave and we're going to just go and be able to train and link up together again. So, it's been difficult, but, you know, it's been difficult for everybody. So, not just us, a lot of nations will be feeling it the same way as us.
True, yeah. Well, Ross, we can't wait to see how it all goes later this year. Good luck in advance for a great experience for you and the Reggae Warriors at the Rugby League World Cup 2021. And more immediately, kudos for putting yourself out there in the Kirklees Council election. Ross Peltier, go well, and thanks for joining the Progressive Rugby League podcast.
Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot. Been a pleasure, man.
Progressive Rugby League.
What a good guy. Inspired me to maybe have another go at male sports captain. I wonder if there'll be a rerun of that count at the 30-year reunion. There better be. All right, that's me. That's us for another show. Until we next meet somewhere in the Rugby League multiverse, Rugby League, homie, and see ya.